Ken and Debbie, we just want you to feel welcome today. Ken, come and share what the Lord put on your heart with us this morning. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks, sir. Good morning. It's good to be with you again. It's been a little over 3 years since the last time we were able to come so close and yet so far away, right? Something like that. 2 months ago, we were in Arizona visiting Debbie's parents. And we went to a little trendy restaurant in Phoenix that we discovered on the Food Network channel, the Barrio Cafe. And as we were about to go in the door, we heard a Japanese woman say, "Ken Sensei, Pastor Ken." She was a woman that had attended our ministry from time to time, lives just down the street from where we live. But a year and a half ago, just stopped coming to church. We tried to contact her, and she was not interested at all. At Barrio Cafe in Phoenix, we run into her. And she forgot her cell phone in the restaurant and came back to get the cell phone, or she wouldn't have seen us coming to the door. Is it by chance? Wow, what a coincidence, we might say. Have you had those kinds of experiences? I'm yet to find out what the point of that was. We haven't had too much contact in the 2 months since, but I know that there was a purpose to that. As a missionary, when I go to visit churches, they often ask me to teach them some Japanese. So I haven't been asked yet at Trinity this morning, but I'm going to just, do it anyway, get it out of the way, so that you don't ask me during the fellowship time and have different people at different times ask me. Now, normally we might say, good morning. That's kind of the natural one. And some of you might know in Japanese, good morning is ohayou gozaimasu, right? Now, you have to bow the head when you say that. Ohayou gozaimasu. Well, the problem with that word is it seems like it's easy to remember because ohayou sounds kind of like the state of Ohio. So a lot of people think, well, okay, I'll just remember the state and then gozaimasu at the end, and I'll be okay. One time I had a guy many years ago now come up to me and say, "Ayo wa gozaimasu." He missed the state. There's only three states with four letters in their name, and he got one of the other two. He didn't say Utah gozaimasu. But anyway, so I'm going to teach you a different word that kind of fits into this context. It's it may not be the most helpful word, but it's repetitive, so it might be easier to remember, and you certainly don't have to worry about which state it's connected to because it's not connected to any state. The word is tamatama. Repeat after me, tamatama. Very good, you've got Japanese down. Tamatama is the word that we say in Japan when something happens by chance. It happened tamatama. Can you believe it? That was tamatama that we met each other in Phoenix. I'm going to use that word a number of times during the sermon, so you will remember it. And probably the next time at a district annual meeting, a couple of you will come up to me and say, "Hey, Pastor Ken, tamatama." Actually, I have some Haitian friends when I preached this sermon 10 years ago who still say that to me when I meet them at annual conferences. So I think I'll probably meet some of you 10 years from now. Tamatama, that's what we say in Japanese. It's a nice little word. It's easy to remember because of the repetitiveness. I don't think too many Japanese will be impressed when you come up to them and say tamatama, but it's a fun word to remember. Things happening by chance, by tamatama. Well, I've had lots of tamatama experiences. I was kind of shocked at that Phoenix experience, and yet I've had so many of them that I wasn't completely surprised either. And I'm just going to tell you a couple of them. First of all, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but some of you probably heard me preach 3 years ago. It was only the morning service, so those who were in the afternoon missed out. But I told a story at the end of a young gentleman I met on an airplane who a year plus later was baptized back in Japan. Some of you might remember that story. Was it tamatama by chance that he happened to be sitting in the seat behind me? I don't think so. I really believe that God had placed him there and me there to be in the right place at the right time for him to come to faith a year plus down the road. It was not by chance. Well, I've experienced those kinds of things many times Another example, of a couple of years ago now, we had a Japanese woman professor who was a visiting scholar at Harvard just for 1 year. She'd been in Boston for a bit before she showed up at our church. But the first Sunday she came to our church, you know, that very first Sunday, she's a seeker. She doesn't know anybody. It's kind of uncomfortable. She runs into a woman, a member of our church, who actually was part of her Japanese tea class that she had started attending while she was studying at Harvard. Is it by chance that that first Sunday she would run into somebody she knows? Is that tamatama? Not that I think. Well, there's numerous other experiences that I can share, and I will share another one later on. But I bet you have had similar kinds of experiences as well. I know the Acts passage was read for you. I will be looking at that shortly. But before I go over to Acts, I want to spend some time looking at one of the great missionary texts in the whole Bible, the book of Esther. Well, how many have actually heard a sermon from the book of Esther? Not Bible study, sermon. Okay. It's not preached very often. Certainly not usually brought up as a missions text, but we'll see. I'm going to kind of go through the Esther story, because if there's one book in the Bible that has lots of seemingly tamatama experiences, it's Esther. And of course, the whole point of it is nothing's tamatama, right? That's what Esther is all about. So you know the story. It happens in the Persian Empire. It's the only book in the Bible, by the way, that never mentions God. And yet God is a big part of the whole book. So I want to highlight a few parts. King Xerxes, he has this huge party for a week. All the dignitaries are there. And at the end, he wants to show off his beautiful wife. She doesn't want to go. She doesn't want to be shown off. So she says no, which is a big deal. You're not supposed to say no to the king, even if you're the queen. And so because of that, she is taken down from her position, and so they have to find a replacement. And of course, we know the story of how Esther, a Jew whose parents had died, apparently, and was raised by her cousin, was the one that eventually was chosen to be queen instead of Vashti, who was replaced. And then she has her cousin Mordecai, right, who's there as well, too. Now, there's a lot of different tamatama experiences in here, but one of the first things that happens after Esther becomes queen is that Mordecai happens to be, tamatama by chance, at the gate when he hears two officers in the king's army plotting to assassinate the king. And through Queen Esther, the word gets to the king, and the plot is foiled. It's amazing. And of course, Esther, a Jew becoming a queen, is a major coincidence as well, too. So what happens later on after that? Well, Mordecai here has a guy who's not too fond of him, right? Haman, the Agagite. It's interesting, if you do any study of Esther, the Agagites were descendants of the Amalekites, longtime enemies of the Israel. So it wasn't just a personal thing here, folks. There was a huge, long history there. Haman is angry at Mordecai because Mordecai the Jew will not bow down to him, because Haman has been placed number two under the king, and he's supposed to be given the honor, and everybody's supposed to bow down to him. It was decreed, but Mordecai will not decree to any human being, so he won't do that to Haman especially, and Haman does not like that. So Haman encourages the king to have all the Jews exterminated. It's really interesting. The reasoning is their practices are different from everybody else. They could cause trouble for the king. It's basically cultural bigotry and racism, pure and simple, if you want to take it there. Haman convinces the king to do it. He just signs it off, and so it's decreed that all the Jews on a certain day will be all killed. Everybody can be killed. A major crisis for the Jews. So you have Queen Esther's there. Mordecai has overheard this, but here's this big crisis. In chapter 4, Mordecai tries to convince Esther to do something to help her people. But Esther's scared because not even the queen can approach the king unless called for. And remember, the previous queen was replaced because she disobeyed the king. So in the conversation between Mordecai and Esther, actually it's a written conversation, Mordecai makes a very interesting statement that I'm going to read from chapter 4. If there's a slide for it, I don't know, we kind of made an arrangement earlier. Chapter 4, verses 13 and 14 says this. Mordecai says, "Do not think that because you are in the king's house that you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this." Some people think the relief coming from another place is the only reference to God in the book, and you know, we could discuss that. That probably is in my book, but that's the only possible place where God is mentioned. But I want to emphasize that last phrase, "for such a time as this, you might be here in this place, in this position." The following part, Esther, you know, she's really struggling with this, but she asks everybody to fast on her behalf, which is a way of approaching God, right? So there's, again, a connection to God. And her final word is, "if I perish, I perish." So she's sort of giving her hand over to God and replacing herself in God's hands in this situation. Chapter 5, she plans this special two-night party, if you will, banquet, only inviting Xerxes and Haman, these two people. And so the first night, she's not able to talk about anything. I don't quite understand all the purposes of that first night. Maybe it was to get Esther's courage up, who knows. But the second night is when she's going to try to convince the king to do something about the situation that she and her people are in. In the meantime, that night between the two, Haman, he's in a really good mood because he was the only one invited to the special queen's banquet. But then he sees Mordecai, and he's not in a very good mood. So overnight, his wife convinces him, and he goes and does this. And what a wife she is, too. But they put a gallows in their front yard. How many of you have gallows in your front yard? No, okay. He's decided he's going to ask the king in the morning to hang Mordecai that day before the next banquet so he can go to the second banquet in a better mood. Well, in Esther, here's the most crucial part of the book, the big tama-tama moment, the most remarkable of coincidences. On the night between those two banquets, before Esther has a chance to talk to King Xerxes, the night before Haman is about to come in and ask the king for permission to hang Mordecai on that gallows he just put up in his front yard. What a decoration. Anyway, on his front yard, King Xerxes has insomnia. The king can't sleep. Well, no big deal, right? Except that, well, Xerxes decides that, I can't sleep, so I'm going to have the record of my reign read to me. Maybe that will put me to sleep, right? So he has the record of the reign read to him that night that he couldn't sleep, which is the night between the two banquets. And here's the tama-tama part, the real, real coincidence. He just happens to have read to him the portion that talked about the fact that the Jew Mordecai had overheard those two officers plotting to assassinate the king. And because of that, the assassination plot was foiled. And lo and behold, he realizes that Mordecai had never been rewarded for that. So the night between the two banquets, when Haman has already decided to try to get permission for Mordecai to hang, the king can't sleep, and he has the exact portion read to him about what Mordecai did for him. You can't get more tama-tama than that. So what happens in the morning? Mordecai comes in a great mood because he's going to ask the king to, I mean, not Mordecai, Haman is in a great mood because he's going to ask the king to for permission to hang Mordecai, and he walks in. The king said, "Whoa, I know, wait, before you tell me what you want to tell me, I got something to ask you. What would you do for some person you really want to honor?" Well, Haman thinks it's about him. So this is, he devises, well, put the king's robe on, put him on the king's horse, parade him down the main street of the city, and let everybody know that this is the person the king wants to honor. King Xerxes says, "Great, do that for Mordecai the Jew." It's amazing. Tama-tama, right? How does that happen? So Haman has to put into place the procedures to honor the exact man he actually wanted to hang. Well, maybe there's going to be a better thing happening for old Haman at that second banquet with Esther. What happens that night? Well, Esther finally is able to tell King Xerxes about the crisis that she is in because she is a Jew, as well as her people. And this is a pretty heavy piece of news for Xerxes. He really likes Esther, and yet once the king has decreed something, he can't just take it away, apparently, in that society. So this is a troubling thing for him. He's angry, he's troubled. He goes out. Haman knows he's in trouble. So Haman is going to beg for mercy from Esther. Well, this is amazing, and I don't have time to read it, but the story is very amazing, and it's really hard. Okay, was he in such a hurry? Did he trip? Esther was kind of laying on a couch, which is what they used to do in those days. When King Xerxes comes in, Haman has tripped or fallen on top of her on the couch. This is what the passage says in the NIV. Just as the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining. The king exclaimed, "Will he even molest the queen while she is with me in the house?" Oh, poor Haman. The king thinks Haman's going to take advantage of his wife. And that's it for Haman. Is it by chance that just as the king walks in, Haman has fallen on top of Queen Esther? Is that tama tama? As a result, Haman is hanged on the very gallows he had originally prepared for Mordecai. Mordecai is honored and becomes very influential in the kingdom, and the Jews are saved. Is it by chance? Was this all tama tama? Obviously, from the Bible's perspective, none of this is by chance. That God's hand is evident throughout the book of Esther and all that occurred in that story. Even though the Lord was never mentioned by name, people understand, Jews understood when they read it, Christians understand when we read it, God was there. The people of God know that the Lord was at work behind the scenes during the whole situation. None of these things happened, tama tama. None of it was by chance. It was all orchestrated by the Lord, especially the timing of King Xerxes' insomnia. The examples I cited earlier similarly in our ministry were not tama tama. They were not by chance. It wasn't by chance that we met that gal in Phoenix. God's going to do something from that, I believe. The main point of Esther is to recognize God at work in our daily lives, even in seemingly ordinary things like someone not being able to sleep. So what's this have to do with missions? Well, if it's not tama tama when a person can't sleep, and it's a sign of God at work, how about where people live? That's what I want to think about this morning in the end of this sermon. This morning I had Acts chapter 17, verses 22 through 28 read for us. It was up on the screen. It's part of Paul's famous passage in Athens to the Areopagus, the think tank, the philosophers, the ruling. It's kind of hard to know exactly what they were all doing, but they thought pretty highly of themselves, and they got together regularly and made important decisions, or at least they thought they were important. But Paul had a chance to speak to them. And it's a really great passage, but I'm not going to go through the whole passage. But Paul, it's a nice passage if you want to analyze how to speak to groups that have no faith in God, because he does a wonderful technique. He notices this altar to the just-in-case God, right? The unknown God. We want to cover all the bases. So here's the cover-all-bases God. Here's the altar to the one we might have missed so that we don't, make sure we get everybody. The just-in-case God or the unknown God. And he says, well, let me introduce you to your unknown God. And he talks about the Creator God. And some wonderful things. It's a great theological passage. I'm only going to focus on two verses in there especially. After he talks about God, the creator of heaven and earth, who does not live in temples made by human beings and in fact doesn't have to be served by humans because he created all the humans anyway, so he doesn't have to be housed in something built by humans. He gives life to all people. And then in verse 26, Paul points out that this God, the creator God, made all humans and in fact all nations and peoples, and he did so that they would inhabit the whole earth. And then he makes this amazing statement. I've got the NIV, but similar in the, is it EVC? See, I don't preach from English Bibles very often, so I don't change my translations. I'm an old school. It's like, well, I get the NIV out when I'm speaking. So anyway, this is what the NIV says. This God determined the times set for the people and the exact places where they should live. Just think about that for just 4 minutes. Paul is telling these people that this unknown God that you worship, the creator God, determined the time set for people. So he determined when people will live at certain places and the places that they're going to live. So God places humans in different places at different times. God's the one that does that. He organizes the living arrangements of people throughout the whole earth, determining where they would live and at what time. It's not by chance. It's not tamatama that different peoples live in different places at specific certain times. Now, some people, Bible scholars, try to limit this to just the original settings of the people groups. But the way Paul says it, especially including the times that people live, I think he's also pointing to the movements of peoples throughout history. So it's not just the original setting of where people were, you know, Japanese in Japan or whatever, but the movement of peoples as well. And I believe that clearly in Esther, we know from the historical records that the Jews were not there by chance, right? We know that story as well, too. It was actually punishment to the Jews, and that's why they were in Persia at the time after Babylon and Assyria invaded Israel and then Judah as well. That wasn't by chance. In Paul's day, people moved around all the time, sometimes because, like the Jews, they were dispersed from Jerusalem because of the persecution, the Christians were, but generally it was a peaceful time, so because of the peace of Roman rule, people were able to move around all the time. You look at it, and the Gentiles were not just the Greeks, it was the Romans, and it was people from all over the place, if you read Acts. There were a lot of movements of people going on during Paul's time. And Paul says that kind of stuff is not by accident, it's not tamatama, it's not by chance. God determines where people are going to live, and where people live, what times. And then he adds the purpose for all of this. And this is just the coolest verse, I think. Maybe there's a lot of great verses in Acts. I won't say it's the best verse in Acts, but it's really a cool verse from my standpoint. Verse 27, this is what Paul says. This is the reason God moves people in specific times and different places, exact places where he determined. God did this so that people would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him. The purpose for moving people is so that they will start to seek God and find him. That's why he moves people around. That's why he determines where people are going to live. Now, I believe that God does this not just for people groups, but individuals as well, too. I really believe that, and we've experienced that in our ministry, and that God determines where people are going to move and live, and individuals as well, too, for the exact purpose that they will seek him and reach out for him, perhaps reach out for him, and then find him. That's why he moves them. Living arrangements, the details of our lives, God has structured for the purpose that we would seek him and find him, and you have experienced that in your lives. Well, he's doing that now as well, too. It's not tamatama where people live or why they're in a certain place at a certain time. God has arranged those kinds of things for a specific purpose so that they will seek him and find him. Now, I know that you have thought about why you live where you live right now. I'm sure there were circumstances that led. Maybe it was a job. Maybe you've always been in this area. Maybe there's other circumstances. Even your specific house, there could be reasons why you chose that house. Maybe you like the color, who knows. But I believe that there was a purpose to that that God ordained that you don't know about, perhaps, for choosing that particular place to live. In our family, my wife and I moved to the greater Boston area to study at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. We moved from Minnesota. Our only purpose to come out east was to go to Gordon-Conwell. We only moved half of our furniture because we were sure that we were going to go back to Minnesota and then figure out what God was going to call us to. We had no idea that he was going to say, now stay in Boston and start reaching out to those Japanese that I'm sending there. But now we know why we're living in the Boston area. Here's another question. Have you ever thought about why your neighbors are living around you? Now, that's something you might not think about. But I think with this passage, we need to start thinking about that. Why is that neighbor living on this side or the other neighbor on this side and across the street? Why is that person across the street? And if we start thinking about those things and recognizing God might be behind those moves, there might be a place for us within that process. Because if God's moved them so that they will seek him and find him, there are some of us who are going to be vehicles to help in that process, right? I'm really glad that this year's conference has around the world and across the street. I go to some churches and it's all around the world, and that's great. I think it's wonderful to be always focusing around the world, but you know, the world starts across the street. And I would add, maybe next year should be around the world and across the street, which results in more around the world. Because some of the people we reach go back to Japan and reach their friends and families. So when you do the across the street stuff, it translates to more around the world happening, maybe not by us, but by the people that we've helped bring to the Lord. Anyway, that emphasis is so important, I think, right now in the United States. We're part of the U.S. Converge Missionary Team, U.S.-based Converge Missionary Team. The word often used for us nowadays is diaspora ministries, those who are scattered around the world. And listen, folks, this is happening. God brings people all over to the United States and other places from all over the world. And those people, some will be immigrants, but some don't stay. Some go back to their countries of origin, or it's really strategic. Like Portuguese speakers, Brazilians can come here, become Christians. They don't go back to Brazil, but they'll go to places like Angola and Mozambique where we can't send missionaries, but they can go and work but also reach people. It's happening. It's strategic to reach people around the world and reach those who are here as well too, because God is moving peoples so that they will seek him and find him. I'm going to just mention one more example from our ministry. This happened quite a few years ago, but it was kind of an amazing thing. We had a man who came to our church. He had been to church when he was in high school and junior high, back in Japan. But when he started college, he stopped going to church completely. And in fact, then he became a company worker, never went to church for 8 years after that. Well, his company decided to send him to Boston to take management courses at MIT Sloan School for Business. It just happened, tamatama, that there was a woman in Boston, a man in high school, who was at that church in Japan that he went to when he was in school, junior high and high school. And well, you know, they knew of each other, so he contacted her. Perhaps she can help him adjust to life in Boston. So she said, well, I go to a Japanese church. You want to come? And because of the obligation, because, you know, the next 8 months I might be in debt to this woman, I might need her help, he decided he was going to go one Sunday to that little Japanese church in Somerville, Mass. First time in church in 8 years. And after church, she introduced him to me. And he said, can you believe tamatama she was here and I'm here now? And she snickered a little bit because there's a running commentary in our ministry that you don't want to say tamatama in front of Pastor Ken because he might correct you. Sure enough, I said, well, you know, it might not be tamatama. Well, would you believe that 2.5 months later, he had given his life to the Lord and was baptized. And at his baptism, he said, well, I thought my company had sent me here to study management courses, but I realize God brought me here to Boston so that I would return to church and come to know him. And when he went back to Japan, he joined a church back in Japan. Was it tamatama that he and that woman were in Boston at the same time? No. It wasn't by chance. God had an express purpose for him. It wasn't management courses. It was so that he would seek the Lord and find him, and he did. When we start to recognize that these kinds of things are happening not by chance, but that God has a hand in it, and we start to see people and how they move as something that God is doing, and then we start to think about, well, maybe there's a place for me for such a time as this. Maybe I'm here to be a vehicle to help that person in the process of reaching out and finding the Lord. It can change the way we do ministry. It can change the way we live our lives. When people walk through our doors, I don't believe anything's tamatama. I know that God has brought them through our doors for a specific purpose. When I hear about people coming to Boston from Japan, when I hear about people coming to the United States, because I'm part of a broader group, Reaching Japanese for Christ, we meet all the time, and we tell everybody, you know, this is an opportunity to reach Japanese while they're here. When Japanese people come to the United States, they're more open to the gospel. They do seek him, and some do find him. Some find him later on when they've returned, but it's not tamatama. The same holds true for this area as well, too. Even cross-culturally, you can have a part. Last time, I encouraged you to think about being part of the process of making disciples of all nations. You might remember the Matthew 28 passage, those of you who are here. While you're going, not go, right? But while you are going, make disciples of all nations. Well, how do you do that? The nations are here. And I outlined the international students. We've got so many international students at Fairfield, Sacred Heart, Housatonic, and the University of Bridgeport. And I mentioned that 3 years ago, that UB is one of the most diverse colleges in the United States. At least back then, it was the 11th most diverse, with students from 80 countries attending. The mission field is across the street, folks. You don't have to go very far. And it's something that we can all be about. Is it by chance that 80 countries are represented at UB? Is that tamatama? I don't think so. Is it tamatama that Trinity Baptist Church is not so far from UB? I don't think so. What happened to Esther is not by chance. Your being here today and my being here today is not by chance. You are not living among your neighbors tamatama, by chance. Those international students and people groups living in this area are not here by chance. And that's what missions and evangelism comes in. It's indeed across the street, just as it is around the world. God placed us here among the people that he has moved here for the purpose that they will seek him and find him. It's not tamatama, but for such a time as this, a time for their salvation. Is it by chance? No, it's not tamatama. It's the Lord's doing, and we have a part in it. Thank you.